So I'm reluctant to tell you about hurts that I've experienced in my life. And the reason is mostly, I would say initially, is because it feels contrived. It feels like an easy thing to do in order to give a relevant illustration of dealing with hurts in our lives, right? So I need to say something personal to you so it helps us connect, and then you relate better to what we're going to talk about today. But in reality, that's not the primary reason why I would be reluctant to share hurts in my life. Here is the real reason that I don't like talking about hurts with you or really anyone else. Is one, it's fiercely personal. It makes me feel exposed and vulnerable, and none of us like feeling that way. And truthfully, when you talk about hurts, pain, things that you've experienced, it stirs up a lot of emotions that we don't like to really feel if we can help not feeling them. And so those are really legitimate reasons for me to not want to talk about hurts, because of course I may use general terms in talking about those and not get very descriptive, but of course I know exactly what I'm talking about. I know the details. And the reality is that I have been deeply wounded by people that I love and that love me, and it feels like those should be the last people that I would experience hurt from, but I have experienced hurts that will stay with me probably forever because of the relationship I had or have with them. And yet the hurt is still there. I've had experiences in church with church people who I believed loved me, but yet did something or said something that was incredibly hurtful. And unfortunately, if you've been in church long enough, you're going to experience several more of those. I know that I have. I've had those who have worked on my staff who never shared any difficulties or never pushed back on anything, and then one day did something that was so unbelievably hurtful, it felt like a blindside. And then I've worked for pastors who had a position, who I respected, who I honored, who I served, and yet they used that position, that authority, as leverage, as weight over me, and then did something that was incredibly hurtful. And then I've had friendships in which I have felt the pain of, you know, the expression, death by a thousand paper cuts? It's not one big thing, it's just all these little cuts over and over until you start realizing how little value you may actually have to this person that you place value on. There's a lot of that that's happened in my life. And as much as I wish that I would never have to hurt again, as much as I wish that I would never have to feel that kind of pain again, the reality is that I'm going to. And I will be honest with you, all of that pain and all of that hurt has shaped who I am. I wish it didn't, because I can't imagine that how it shaped me made me better. It's probably made me a lot more cautious. It's probably made me a lot more skeptical. It's probably made me play relationships a lot safer than maybe I need to. It's maybe made me see people in the church or people that I've worked for, people that work for me, with an eye of skepticism now. Because we all want to protect ourselves from that hurt. So in your notes, you actually will see a QR code at the top. If you haven't already clicked on that, pull out your camera app and just open up your camera app. It'll bring up a little link, and you'll instantly have access to just do a little survey. And here's the question: how much impact do you think your past hurts have had on your present life? Now, it's probably not something you think about regularly, because again, none of us like to think about the thing that maybe shaped us and maybe wounded us and maybe stirs up a bunch of feelings we wouldn't want to revisit if we didn't have to. Now, I'd like to pretend that the people who hurt me And you, in your life, like to pretend they didn't know what they were doing. I'd like to think of it that way because maybe it helps lessen the, I don't know if it lessens the impact, but maybe it allows us a little bit of understanding if we just think they didn't know. But the reality is that people are just mean sometimes. People are cruel sometimes. People are vindictive, and people do things to us that they know they're doing. And in their minds, they've rationalized and justified doing it. They're careless and they're selfish, and they're not doing it by mistake. Then, of course, there are people who are just being thoughtless. They're not thinking through their words. They're not realizing the impact of what they do and how they say something or how they treat you, and they just aren't being thoughtful. They're too self-involved sometimes to give thought to how they're impacting and the damage that they're doing in your life. If I could stop everyone from being thoughtless or careless or cruel or mean, I would do that. I don't have the power to stop you from hurting me any more than you have the power to stop me from hurting you. And I have no doubt that I've hurt people. I have no doubt I'm somebody's painful memory. I have no doubt that I'm the person in someone's story, in their sequence of hurts in their life. And as much as I don't think I'm doing that, and as much as I don't want to do that, there's a good chance that I'll do or say something in somebody's life, somebody that I care about, and it's going to hurt them. I wish that I could stop all of that, but the reality is I'll continue to get hurt, and you're going to continue to get hurt, and I'm going to continue to hurt people, and you're going to continue to hurt people. But I will tell you this, there is a way for us to lessen the impact of hurt in our lives, to lessen the frequency of hurt and how deeply we get hurt when we do. You do have control over that. You do have the ability to change that. So let's take a look. How many of you answered today? Let me turn this towards me a little bit. Slido, give us the results. It's voice activated. That doesn't tell us anything. What are we doing, Slido? Slido, you're disappointing me this morning. Slido, you've hurt me. There we go. Wow. 64% of us said that hurts have had a big impact on who we are today. 30% said some impact. Nobody said no impact at all. And 6% said a small impact. The reality is every single one of us in here who answered that question said in some way hurts have impacted who I am today. So I think this is going to be a good conversation for us to have. Grab your notes. If you don't already have them out, you can follow along in the app as well. To change how often, how badly I get hurt, I need to start, number one, making myself a smaller target. Making myself a smaller target. So I'm going to say this. Nobody deserves to be victimized. In the world, none of us should have to change our habits or our routines or our postures just so that we don't get mugged or robbed or burglarized or something worse. You shouldn't have to do anything to be safe. But the reality is that there are those who are mugging and robbing and burglarizing people. I have shared with you guys a story in my past. In 1991, we were in downtown Kansas City for my best friend's wedding, and we were robbed at gunpoint. And now, look, it was terrifying, and it truly, truly, truly shaped me. I mean, there was a time in therapy when I brought it up, and I was like, yeah, and then, you know, the time I was robbed, and my therapist was like, what? What? Why haven't you, what? And I said, oh, yeah, I was robbed at gunpoint, and he's like, oh, my God, Chris, this is so huge. Like, why didn't you say this before? I was like, oh, I didn't think it was that big of a deal. He's like, that's a huge deal. It was Jerry Seinfeld that I was seeing as a therapist. That's a huge deal. But they say if you want to, I mean, we went to downtown Kansas City at like 1 a.m. to get something to eat. And we parked way off by we were Bible college students. We just happened to find parking near a strip club. But I will tell you, at 2 a.m, 1 a.m, not a great place to park if you're trying to stay out of harm's way. As I look at it now, I think you could have been so much smaller of a target. So experts say this, if you don't want your home burglarized, you want to have lots of lights inside and out. You want to have a security camera visible or security cameras visible. You want to have an alarm system and signs outside that say you have an alarm system. And you want to keep your shrubs and your plants and your trees cut back so it doesn't give them places to hide in the shadows. Will that guarantee you don't get burglarized? No, but experts say this, and criminals even say this, we'll just move on to a house that's an easier target. We don't want to contend with lights and pets and sound or alarm systems and cameras, and it's just easier to go to the house that's dark. So when it comes to making yourself a smaller target and being hurt by people, let me say this. It's wise to give people as little to work with as possible. Right? If you are putting a huge target on your back because of your own behavior, your own actions, your own words, the way you live your life, be ready then for people to target you. But listen to what 1 Peter 3:16 and 17 says. Give a kind and respectful answer and keep your conscience clear. This way you will make people ashamed for saying bad things about your good conduct as a follower of Christ. You are better off to obey God and suffer for doing what's right than suffer for doing what's wrong. Listen, you're going to experience pain in life, but better that you experience it for having been a good person. And say, well, listen, I mean, people are going to attack me. I can't do anything about that. But what I can do, I have a clear conscience. I live a good life. I treat people well. I follow Jesus. I try to behave like Jesus in my words and my actions. So I live in such a way that if someone attacks my character, if someone attacks what I say, if someone attacks my behavior, if someone attacks my reputation, everyone's going to look at them and say, what? No. I don't believe that at all. But here's the problem. It's so easy to believe the attack sometimes, isn't it? Because maybe we've given them room to do that. I want to be able to live a life where someone attacks my character and others say that's without merit. So I worked on a staff. Lisa and I were on a very large church staff, and we had very large staff meetings. There'd be like 60 people in our staff meeting, and then it would get reduced down to the pastors and directors level, and there'd be like 20-something of us in there, and that's when the gloves really came off. That's when we would just shred people in those meetings and just talk about people, and anyone that left or got fired or in some way wasn't in the room, man, they were prey to get just absolutely eaten alive. And it was such a toxic culture, and Lisa and I were getting ready to leave, and I told some very close friends. They ended up coming here and being worship leaders with us for many years. They were on staff with us there, and I said, I'm reluctant to resign because I know what's going to happen the week after we leave. It's going to be our name that gets just torn apart. And here's what my friend said to me. He said, don't worry about that. He said, as soon as he starts, and he was talking about the lead pastor, as soon as he starts talking about you and says anything negative, he says, it's just not going to compute with us. And I really, really appreciated that because it felt like maybe, even in all of the pain, that I had lived a life there that had earned me enough reputation, that my character was enough intact, that the attacks, even from the lead pastor, wouldn't land with those who were listening. Number two is this: to change how often and how badly I get hurt, I need to start getting my heart ready to work through what's coming. Start getting my heart ready to work through what's coming. So I have a lot of family and friends. I grew up in St. Louis, or actually suburb of St. Louis. I've told you many times, and all of my side of the family is back there. And I have a lot of friendships, and they're all over the country. And They hear about our wildfires on the news, and you know how news can't just tell the facts. It has to really make it sound like the entire state's on fire and we're all going to burn alive and there's nowhere to escape because California is an island, I guess, and you know, we can only run off into the ocean. And so I get a lot of texts like, hey, heard about the fire. Are you okay? And I'm like, the fire? What are you talking about? I was like, first of all, there's 28 fires. I don't know which one you're, are you anywhere near that? Oh, no, I'm not really anywhere near. And I have to explain to them, like, fires here are like tornadoes in Missouri. Like, growing up, like, there's tornadoes all the time. You just really were counting on the odds that you weren't going to get hit by that tornado. And you were going to be right most of the time. And I just say it's kind of like weather here. We don't have really weather for about 9 months. And so fires are our weather. It's kind of like a thunder shower. That's a fire for us. And I'm not downplaying the destructiveness of fire. But I would say this, that there are places that you can live that would keep you out of the fire's path typically. And even if you are in a place where there's a high probability of fire, there's actually things you can do. And this guy, I ran across this news story, made national news for doing something really incredibly simple that saved his home when so many homes were lost. Take a look at this video really quick.
I was able to, after the last brush fire that got close to us a couple years ago, I bought these cheap sprinklers, the ones that wave back and forth, and bought hoses, had them ready, popped them up on my roof, turned them on, I sprayed down the fire retardant on the side of my house, and I left. Got up with my family. I got trapped by the flames going down Sunset. It was difficult. It was like Afghanistan type difficult. But what happened is, because I had those sprinklers up there, the flames came down the hill, and you could see from where the sprinklers parked in the backyard that the flames came right up to the back water and stopped.
So I love that, because there was no real high-tech solution. He didn't spend tens of thousands of dollars. He didn't invent something. He took cheap sprinklers and turned them on. So I think, what is it then? The Bible talks about the enemy shooting fiery darts at us, of arrows, flaming arrows at us. And James, it talks about how our tongue can set the whole world on fire because of what we say. Not fire in a good way, but burn it to the ground kind of fire. And I think, so what are the cheap sprinklers that we could put all over the housing of our mind and our heart that would keep that from destroying whatever words or whatever, not that they won't come, not that flames won't come to us, but we can keep the flames at bay. And I'm going to read to you one of my favorite passages out of Philippians 4. It says this, finally, brothers and sisters, and here's why I love passages like this, because it so doesn't come to me naturally to think this way. I love the challenge of training my mind. Fill your minds with beauty and truth and meditate, focus heavily on whatever is honorable and what's right and what's pure and whatever is lovely and whatever is good and whatever is virtuous and whatever is praiseworthy. Cover your mind. So listen, your mind is either a parched, dry, desert land where everything with the simplest spark will go up in flames, or you have saturated it. You have watered it well. It's fruitful. It's plush. It's growing green, and it is resistant to fire. Like, go to Washington, go to Oregon, where it rains all the time and where everything's plush and green, and just try to start a fire there. I'm sure you could get one going, but it wouldn't travel far, would it? Because it's so green, it's so well watered and so well fertilized that it can't take root, the fire can't destroy. And I want you to hear this. When you are fruitful in your mind, when you are producing those things in your mind, you are producing health that repels unhealthiness. So I want to read you three passages right in a row that just communicate what it looks like when we're under attack, but we have the healthiness, we have the sprinklers just going all the time. There's just sprinklers covering our mind and our heart. Listen to what it first says in 1 Peter 3:9-10. Don't do wrong to anyone and pay them back for doing wrong to you. Or don't insult anyone to pay them back for insulting you, but ask God to bless them. Do this because you yourselves were chosen to receive a blessing. The scriptures say if you want to enjoy true life and have only good days, then avoid saying anything hurtful and never let a lie come out of your mouth. Bless people who hurt you. Now listen to what it says in Romans 12:14. This is again Paul. Bless those who hurt you. Bless them and do not curse them. Again, in Romans 12:17-18, it says, don't mistreat someone who's mistreated you, but try to earn the respect of others and do your best to live at peace with everyone. Listen again, if you want to earn a reputation that's almost impossible to attack, then don't give people fodder, don't give people ammunition. Just because somebody's hurt you, can I tell you how to preserve your integrity? Be the one who doesn't hurt back. I talked about it last week, taking the slap on the face and just saying, I'm not going to do this. I'm going to bless you instead. That's control. That's power. And then listen to Jesus's words in Luke 6:27-28. Jesus then said, I say this to you who are listening carefully to me. Love the people who want to hurt you. Do good things to the people that hate you. I'm reading these so quick, I don't know that they have time to sink in, so I encourage you, read these later. Say good things to the people that say bad things against you and pray for people who give you pain. Thank you, but no thank you, Jesus, right? You're Jesus, I get it. Go for it. We'll all admire and respect you. You're the perfect son of God. But don't be trying to get us onto that bandwagon, right? But that is who Jesus is. And when he stood before his accusers, they had to lie. They had to lie. I mean, they crucified him based on lies. But those who knew Jesus, never believed a word of any of that. They knew better about all of that. Jesus knew what he was on earth for, and yet he still said, everyone who talked to all these religious leaders that accuse me, all these people that say terrible things about me, all these people that will try to destroy me, I want to bless them. I want to pray for them. That's how a healthy, well-watered person behaves in the face of fire. Number three is this: to change how often and how badly I get hurt, I need to start helping others place their hurt so they don't have to misplace it. So this might be one of the hardest points to get amens on, and that's okay. I get it. It's going to take a minute for us to really absorb and let it sink in that one of the greatest ways to protect yourself from hurt is to help those who are trying to hurt you. It's counterintuitive. It doesn't feel good. It's not going to be the thing that you want to do. It's not instinctual to us to want to help the person who's trying to hurt us. I've told you this story before. We used to have two toy rat terriers. They were twin sisters from the same litter. And we lived at another house, and we had this not great family that lived behind us, and they had a pit bull. And the pit bull would bang its head against the fence and had loosened fence boards and knocked one out where you could kind of push it open. And somehow one of our dogs, Lucy, had the dog got its muzzle through and started pulling Lucy through the fence and had her by her arm. And Lisa came running in and just started screaming, "Chris, you got to get out here." And I heard Lucy yelping really loud, and I ran to her and I started punching the pit bull through the fence, right? As hard as you can through a little slat that big, and pulling Lucy, right? And Lucy turned and bit me. Right? Because she couldn't disconnect who was hurting her. Right? And she was lashing out at everybody. And that's unfortunately how you and I behave when we're hurt. We don't want to help anyone, especially I wasn't there stroking the head of the pit bull. "Oh, I'm sorry, buddy. Has somebody hurt you in your life and that's why you're doing this to her? We can talk. Do you like coffee? I'll take you to Starbucks." If I could have done more, I would have done more to the dog, right? So Jesus had been sent word that his close friend Lazarus was near death. He was really, really sick, and Jesus was a distance away, that he needed a heads up, like you need to get going and get to Lazarus quickly, and he didn't. Jesus didn't really act urgently. Everybody was like, "We should go," and Jesus was like, "We're good. Just, I want to finish lunch, and there's a bingo after this. I kind of like to hang out for that." And it was like people couldn't understand why he wasn't acting more urgently. And finally, he takes his disciples and he travels to where Lazarus is. But by the time he gets there, he's too late. And by too late, I mean he had already died. And they had already begun mourning his death. And there was two people really, 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 really upset. And that was Lazarus's sisters, Mary and Martha, who were close with Jesus. And Martha stayed back because she was like maybe too hurt, or she just wanted to, I don't know. But Mary, as soon as she heard Jesus was there, she bolted from where she was and she was going to have a word with Jesus. And she went, and in no uncertain terms, she let Jesus know this was entirely his fault that Lazarus died. And I'm in the fight or flight or freeze scenario, I'm always a fight. Like I never flee, I never freeze. I'll just fight. Even if I have no chance of winning the fight, like I'll just fight, right? And if Mary had said that to me, I would have maybe as kindly as possible put Mary in her place. "Listen, I know things are not well right now and you're hurting a little bit, but we're not going to do this right here in front of everyone," right? And she was dressing him down. Jesus didn't do that. As a matter of fact, Jesus, instead of reacting or getting defensive or instead of setting her straight and using the facts, instead of any of the things that Jesus was justified in doing, Jesus reacted with empathy and compassion to the person who was attacking him, blaming him. A person that he loved and a person that he knew and a person he had relationship with that should have known better and never should have said the things she said to Jesus. She did it and she was hurting, and Jesus understood the hurt. And the hurt is what drove her to act the way she did. And so here's how Jesus responded. Listen to John 11, 33 and 35. When Jesus saw Mary's profound grief and the moaning and the weeping of her companions, friends, and people who had traveled there, he was deeply moved by their pain and his spirit, and he was intensely troubled, and as they walked, Jesus wept. Jesus connected to the hurt. Do you think Mary needed to be set straight? Maybe we think that. Maybe we think that Mary needs to get over this and stop accusing the wrong people, but Jesus saw that the need was somebody hurt with her. That what she needed most from Jesus, her friend, the Savior, is that he understood the pain that she was in. And if you know how the story goes, you know that it doesn't end with pain, but with the celebration of Jesus raising Lazarus back to life, only to say this, that the thing that makes us feel so much intense pain, it doesn't mean that we have to stay in that pain, because it's possible that God can intervene in that moment and do something in the life of the person who's hurting and attacking that turns them around And wouldn't you want to be a part of that? Wouldn't you want to be on the other side of that? Wouldn't you want to say, listen, when we started our relationship together, this one here did not like this one here. Had a lot of bad things to say about me, but man, God has done some crazy things in our relationship and brought some things back to life and healed some hurts in their life. And we're so good. This is so good what we have here. Fourth and finally is this. To change how often and how badly I get hurt, I need to start accelerating my forgiveness to speed up my healing. So I'm not going to try and convince you that any of the things we've talked about are easy or that it's going to be 100% effective and that you're going to stay off the battlefield. This doesn't really protect you from being in the line of fire. Because as healthy and as good as you are, you're going to intersect with people who aren't healthy and good, who are still going to do hurtful things, say hurtful things, behave in ways that you just cannot understand in your healthy mind how somebody behaves that way. But I can promise you there is a way for you to live without carrying the heavy shrapnel that causes scars, that won't allow us to heal, that weighs us down, and that sets off the alarms as we're going through the metal detectors of life where something arises, an issue arises, and that's a metal detector. It kind of tests where you are emotionally and spiritually and mentally, and you go through that situation, that thing in your marriage, that thing with your kids, that thing in your own spiritual journey, and it just starts pinging off everything. I mean, setting off sirens and alarms and red lights. And you just go, I need to be healthier to go through things. I just don't have what it takes to go through something like this well. But you don't have to be like that. You don't have to carry that with you. And here's the way to move past a place where you're carrying all those hurts. We have to stop keeping score. It's so hard because we're in a world that measures everything. How much money you have, how much influence you have, how much title you have, how much popularity or influence you have. We measure everything. I mean, if you look at it now in California, I think it's a good thing. I actually think it's a really good thing because it makes me choose differently when I look up on the menu and it says 1,560 calories for a sandwich. And I go, that's almost all I get to eat. I only get 2,200 calories. I'm not wasting it on a crappy Ike's sandwich that's $16 anyway. There's no sandwich worth $16. And it's not worth 1,560 calories either. Did they just line up calories and dollar amount and try to get those as close as possible? What's the 2,000 calories? Oh, that's $20. Yeah, coincidentally. But we measure everything. And when something has meaning to us, of course we keep score. We mark in our minds and in our hearts who did that to us and what exactly, because we have it in our mind that one day we're going to get to confront this with the person. We're going to get this all out, and we want to have our facts ready and we want to have the ammunition ready if they somehow deny that they did this to us, and we carry all that with us. So you're saying, PC, we should not keep score, not we should let that go. Listen, I'm going to ask you a question. Are the hurts real? Right? Are your feelings about those legitimate? Is it even your right to hold somebody accountable for doing the wrong thing? If I answer yes to all of those, if I say yes, those hurts are real, yes, it's legitimate to feel the way you feel, and yes, you should hold people accountable for bad behavior, does that make you feel better? Do you feel less hurt? If I answer yes to any question you ask about that, does it make the pain go away? And the answer, of course, is no. So the question then remains, what good is it for us to hold on? And there's a solution. There's a solution for it. And it feels, oh my gosh, it feels like we're going to give the world permission to just attack with no consequence. But I want you to hear this. God is the perfect scorekeeper. You don't have to worry about people not being held accountable. You don't have to worry about whether it's going to come back around to them. You don't have to worry about what's going to happen to the person that got away with it. I want you to know this. Listen, there was two guys, maybe three, that robbed eight of us. I think it was two guys. One of them had a gun, and that's the only one that mattered in the group, right? Now the other guy, it was the one with the gun that controlled that situation, and they never caught him. That I know of. Do you think that those guys went the rest of their life without doing another stupid, illegal thing, and they just got away? No. You live that kind of lifestyle, and consequences are sure to meet up with you. They didn't get caught for doing what they did to us, but I promise you, life found a way of meeting back up with them. And you don't have to worry about whether consequences will fall on those who do the wrong thing. But I also want to tell you this, that God will catch up with those who do the wrong thing and can do miraculous things in their life. And as followers of Christ, we want to meet people's wrongdoing with the same grace that we experienced. And here's what we'll close with. Paul's words to the church in Ephesus when he said this. Make a clean break with all cutting, backbiting, profane talk, getting back at people, setting people straight. Be gentle with one another, sensitive. And listen, forgive one another as quickly and as thoroughly as God and Christ forgave you. Can I tell you that you have not gone through a day without doing something that hurt the heart of God? But God has chosen to release you in forgiveness because his mind is filled with that which is pure and noble and true and praiseworthy and honorable. God is all of those things, but he has no other choice but to release you in forgiveness for the offenses against him, for all the hurts. And God has, mind you, a perfect memory. And yet the word says that he separates us as far, our sins from us, as far as the east is from the west, and he casts our sins into the sea of forgetfulness. God chooses to not hold our sins against us. And Paul says to the Ephesians who were struggling with each other, hurting each other, being hurt by each other, just let it go as quickly as possible. As soon as Jesus forgave you, everything was erased. There was no record of that wrongdoing, and that's the way you need to treat each other. Just release each other in forgiveness. I forgive you, I forgive you, I forgive you, because it liberates you. It sets you free. You get to walk without the shrapnel, the weight. Their hurt may not end, but yours does. Their hurt may not end that day, but yours doesn't have to keep going. Why would you choose to carry the pain of offense? It's not because it makes it more legitimate. It's legitimate one way or the other, but you know what really, really, really makes it truly something meaningful is you saying, yeah, they did say that, huh? They did do that. Honestly, though, I've forgiven them. Yeah, I can't forget because it was a pretty rough season and it really did hurt me, but I've just chosen to let it go. It would be wrong for me to just keep holding that above their head. And I know I could pretend to have forgiven them but not really forgiven them, but I don't want God to pretend to forgive me. And so I want to just be quick and just let people, and I mean, Peter asked Jesus, like, how many times are we supposed to do that? Like, good grief. And Jesus said, yeah, countless. As many times as I'll do it for you. Maybe that's the measurement. We say, God, I'll forgive up to the point I want to be forgiven. That's how many times I'll do that. So if you only want to be forgiven three times, then just forgive others three times. I know that God's grace is so much bigger than anything we can do. And you and I may never get to that point, but I do think that you can just start practicing a discipline. I was telling this missionary, I said, I had so little confidence when I started as lead pastor here. I said, I had for 15 years been in ministry and I felt like a confident speaker and I felt like a really confident number two guy. I could make any pastor look really good. I was good at being behind the scenes. I loved doing stuff that made somebody else look good. And then it became my responsibility. I was the number one guy. And I said, I literally would have panic attacks right before I would go speak. My heart would race. I would feel flush. I would feel dizzy. My throat would go dry. And I thought, I can't even believe I'm feeling, I've never felt this in my entire life. And I said, I, for the first like 6 months, had to just fake it. I had to say to myself, I would just do this mantra, God, I have your favor, and because I have your favor, I have the favor of your people. God, I have your favor, and because I have your favor, I have the favor of your people. And I would have to tell myself that. I didn't believe it, not even for a minute. I felt like everyone was judging me. I felt like nobody wanted me there. I felt really, really small and insecure, but I had to fake it until I could make it. I had to just play the role until it happened. And I'm telling you, forgiveness is not going to come easily, but just fake it. I forgive you. Not really. I forgive you. No, I'm having a really hard time forgiving you, but I forgive you. It's forgiven. I'm not bringing it up again. It's forgiven. It's not really forgiven, but I'm going to forgive you until I actually can forgive you. That's how we lessen how often we get hurt and how much hurt we have to carry. Would you bow your heads and close your eyes so that we can have one last moment of decision, of movement of our heart? And if you'd say, yeah, I need this. I carry those hurts just like you do, and it's super, super hard to let go of them, and it's super, super hard to trust and to not be defensive and to not be on edge and to not let those hurts shape who I am. I mean, almost 70% of us said who I am today, how I live my life today is impacted by hurts in my past. So God, we're praying that you help us achieve the impossible. And that is to do something different with our hurt than what we know to do and what we've trained ourselves to do and what instinctually feels right to do. Let us do what you did and what you tell us to do. Because I do like the way that looks. I like not carrying hurt. I like the idea of blessing those who try to hurt me and saying good things about those who say bad things. I like what that makes me look like. I like the idea that my character would be such that people can't attack it and it really stick. But that means I have to change some things about the way I treat people and the way I respond to how people hurt me. And I'm praying for every single one of us that we begin to learn this new way of dealing with hurt in our lives. I thank you for it now because I know many, many, many people are going to make a decision today to do something different with their hurt from this point forward. So thank you in advance for what you're going to help us accomplish in this area of our life. In Jesus' name, amen. 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 Thank you.